or next week, in contrast to all of the preceding topics, will be just a classical halakhic topic, and one, unfortunately, that comes up. The Gemara says, Misha haita pito afuya, utvachot avuach, v'yeno mazug, umeit aviv shel hatan, oima shel kala. Suppose all the wedding preparations are made, and just before the wedding, the father of the groom or the mother of the bride dies. Machnisin et hameit lecheder, you put the corpse aside, v'yeta hatan v'yeta kala lechupa, and then proceed with the wedding. Uboel bilat mitzvah, and the wedding is physically consummated. Upoesh, and then they separate the bride from the groom. V'noheg shabbat yumei hamishteh, and they have the 7 days of Shavuot brachos of celebration. V'achakach noheg shabbat yumei yevelut, and then Shiva starts immediately following the Shavuot brachos. So you have a 7 day period of celebration, followed by a 7 day period of mourning. V'chol otan hayamim, during these, all of these days, hu yashen ben ha'anashim v'hi yashena ben ha'anashim. They sleep separately. V'ein mon'in tachshitim min ha'kala kol shloshim yom. And within the first 30 days of the wedding, they allow the bride to wear jewelry and finery and so on. So that's the halacha. So the halacha is telling us that under certain circumstances, the dealing with not only the funeral, not only the mourning, but the funeral itself is delayed to let the wedding take precedence. But the Gemara says, "V'dafka aviv shel hatan o ima shel kala." This is only talking about a situation where it's the father of the groom. In those days, it was the father of the groom who took responsibility for organizing the wedding feast and for financing the wedding feast. O ima shel kala was the mother of the bride who got the bride ready for the wedding, prepared the trousseau, and so on. Deleka inish tachlu. Once the father of the groom has died, there's not going to be anyone else around to be able to actually organize the wedding. He's a poor orphan. And similarly, if the mother of the bride, after having made all these preparations, dies, she's not going to be around to help prepare for a wedding that would be delayed for 5 or 6 weeks. Aval ipcha, but the opposite. For example, the mother of the groom or the father of the bride, lo. Then the funeral takes place, the wedding is postponed, and everything starts again later. When later, we'll see, but it's postponed. Amar Achram Bar Papa, Amar Abchista. Lo shanu ela shenatam mayim al gabi basar. When the meat has already been put into the pot to cook, so that not only that the death took place after the actual cooking began for the feast. Avolonatan mayim al gabi basar mizdabein. As long as the meat hasn't yet been cooked, the groom can salvage the cost of the wedding feast by selling the meat out in the butcher's store at a small loss, perhaps. But nevertheless, it can be salvaged, and therefore the funeral takes place and the wedding is postponed. Amar Papa, Ubekrach, if you're talking about a big city, Akal Pishin Atan Mayin Al Gabi Basar Mizdabein. Even cooked meat you'll find a market for in a large city. Amar Papa, Ubekvar, if it's a small, tiny little village, Akal Pishin Lo Natan Mayin Al Gabi Basar Lo Mizdabein. Once the meat has been slaughtered and gotten ready, even if it hasn't yet been cooked, there's no way of selling the amount of meat that you got for a large group of guests coming together. There's just not enough people in the village to actually buy it. There's not enough market. Ve'ela d'Rav Chista heki mishtachat lam. Rav Chista's halacha, who distinguishes between whether the pot has been put up or not, when, under what circumstances does that apply? Amar Rav Ashi kagon matamachsia, like the town of matamachsia, the matka mikra. It isn't quite a big city, it's not New York, Umafkar Mikvah, but it's also not a tiny village, so a town of intermediate size, this might apply to. Tanya Kavatele Rav Chista, Haresha Ya Pito Apuya Utvachot Abuach Yino Mazug Benatan Mayim Agabe Basar Umeit Aviv Shel Hatan O Chatam Ayima Shel Kala Machnisin Et Ameit Lecheder Yet Achatam Yet Akala Lukupa Ubael Bilat Mitzvah Uporesh Benoheg Shivat Yumei Hamishteh Yachakach Noheg Shivat Yumei Availut. Okay, so that is the halacha that I want to study. We have to go through the Tosfos, so that's why I xeroxed the regular Gemara on the next page, but as I mentioned earlier, my new CD-ROM has come in with the Tosfos on it, so starting next week, one doesn't need the Gemara for the Tosfos either. Let's take a quick look at some of the basics of this subject, but before doing that, let's look at the way the Yerushalmi deals with this. I didn't xerox the preceding page or print out the preceding page of the Gemara, but the preceding page of the Gemara says ve'im min ha'ones mipnei ha'ones mutar, and then tries to explain what is ones in this case, and this was one of the answers, ones being that you had to hurry up the marriage because of the death of one of the parents, perhaps. The Yerushalmi has an intriguing, different explanation of ones. V'im mepnei ha'ones mutar, ma mepnei ha'ones? Mepnei ha'kshafim. The ones refers to some kind of witchcraft or love potion or something. The precise details are in Professor Lieberman's book, which I'm still not unpacked, so I can't get you my copy of it, where he describes the actual cases of forms of binding the groom or the bride away, keeping them away from one another by witchcraft and so on, which they were worried about and therefore hurried up to get the marriage in one day earlier. Okay. Let's take a look at the second quotation from this, say, from our Yerushalmi here.
That definition of ones you mentioned before, hurrying the marriage because of the death of a parent.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to try to schedule that ceremony sooner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The almana, the Yerushalmi says, the almana biyom hachamishi, and a widow on Thursday. The Yerushalmi says, the almana biyom hachamishi. She'im omerat lo be'echad mikol yomot ha'chashana. Why is the wedding of the widow scheduled for Thursday afternoon? Because it says that if you scheduled the wedding for any other day of the week, afhu mashkim v'yotzei mumlachto. The next morning, he's going to get up and go to work. We talked sha'at omer lo v'chamishi, if the wedding is scheduled for Thursday afternoon, since Friday is only a half day anyway, at least she gets three straight days with her new husband. Yerushalmi says, Moshe hitkin Shabbat Yumei HaMishteh v'Shabbat Yumei HaAvel. That Moshe made this rule of having 7 days of Sheva Brachos for a wedding and seven days of mourning. V'lo hitkin le'almana klum. But he didn't provide for the widow, this was only for the bride, and therefore the Chachamim made a takana that widows at least get married Thursday afternoon, so even though there's no official 7 day period of celebration, at least the husband doesn't run off to work the following morning. Okay.
It's amazing that they have a legislative for that.
Yeah. Let's now take a look at the Gemara Noid Katan. Tanu Rabbanan. Avail. Tanu Rabbanan. Avail. Shabbat Rishona. Eino Yotzei Mitechach Bipetach Beito. The first week he doesn't leave his house. That's still our custom today, staying home, sitting Shiva for a week. Shnia Yotzei V'eino Yoshev Bimkomo. He doesn't sit in a regular place in shul. Shlishit yoshevim kamo ve'ino medaber. Rabbiyit harayu b'chol adam. Rabbi Yehuda omer lo hutzuchu lomar Shabbat harishona lo yitzein v'itoch beito sharei hakol nechnasim lebeito lenachamo. What does that mean? He has to say, I'm certainly he's going to be home for the first week because people are making the shiva calls. Ela shniya eino yotzei mipetach beito. Shlishit yotzei v'ino yoshevim kamo. Rabbiyit yoshevim kamo ve'ino medaber. Chamishit harayu b'chol adam. Tana Rabbanan. Kol shloshim yom linesuin. A man who is a mourner, who is an avel, presumably the Gemara is telling us, should not marry within the 30 days. In other words, during Shloshim, a person who is a mourner for one of the people that he has to actually be mourned for, doesn't get married within 30 days. Meita ishto, but if it's his wife who died, asur lisa isha acheret ad she'avgu alav shlosha regalim. He doesn't get married until 3 holidays have passed. Rabbi Yehuda omer, regal rishon v'sheni asur shlishi muta. Ve'im ein lo banim, but if the man has no children, mutal lisa li'alta. That this principle that a person should not marry, take a second wife until almost a year has passed, does not apply to a man who doesn't have children. What la'altar means, we'll also have to figure out. And Tosfos will discuss that. Mishum bitul tiryav rivya. Heinicha lo banim k'tanim. If his wife died and left him with small children, so he certainly needs help in the house to take care of his tiny children. Mutal lisal la'altar mupnei panasatan. He can get married right away in order to help take care of the children. Ma'aseh shemeta ishto shel Yosef ha-kohen v'yamar lo chotah b'beit ha-kfarot l'chi u'panasi et b'nei ha-chotah. His wife died and he left him with some small children, and at the gravesite, he said to his wife's sister, come, let's get married so that you can help take care of your nephews. V'yamar pichein, even though that was done, lo ba'eleha ela l'zman m'ruba. He didn't actually physically consummate the marriage for a long time. Ma'ilas man mububa amar papal yachar shloshim yom. Okay. Let's take a look at Tosfos on this page. Ad sheyavgu shlosha regalim. A man's wife dies, he doesn't remarry until after 3 holidays have passed. Ad sheyehye shlosha regalim below simcha, that he should suffer for at least 3 holidays without joy. Below yishkacha havat ishto. So he should not forget the love of his wife. That's one interpretation that Tosfos gives. Inami, kedei sheyisa isha acheret, v'lo yehe zachur min harishona. That the reason may not be in order to preserve the memory of his first wife, but quite the opposite, that if he's going to remarry, if he remarries right away, he will constantly be remembering his first wife, and therefore that would interfere with the marriage with the second wife. Shelo yehe shtei deyot b'mita. Va'od, furthermore, pen yaskirena ahavat ishto lekantara. He may criticize his second wife, saying, look, you didn't do as well as my first wife. This comparing the second wife to the first wife will cause a fight between the husband and wife. Okay, the ein shayach lifsok Rabbi Yehuda the amar shnei regalim mishum the kaimel and lael kedivrei hamakel ba'aveir. Remember, there's a general principle that if there's a machloket in the laws of aveilut, we follow the more lenient ruling. Tosfos says that doesn't apply to this particular law here about not remarrying within until 3 holidays have passed, and Rabbi Yehuda has a shorter period, because here this is not a din of aveilut. The reason for the postponement is in order to have a happy second marriage rather than a part of mourning for the first wife, and therefore the reason is not because of the aveilut, for the secondary reason. The Hamilta Pligi Bahaka Inozu Ba'avel, the Mehiblaw with Kalula. This is not the laws of Avelut. Okay. Alright. Let's take a look at the next page. Now let's come to some, let's spend a little bit of time on just general considerations about Avelut. This is from the Rif in Brachot, the next page. The Mishnah says, Chatan Patur Mikriyat Shema. Balayla harishon ad motzei Shabbat im lo asa ma'aseh. The groom doesn't say Kriya Shema for the first night, and if for some reason or other the marriage was not consummated even until motzei Shabbat, he still doesn't say Kriya Shema until the marriage is physically consummated. Uma'aseh b'Rabban Gamliel shenasa isha v'kara layla harishon. Rabban Gamliel got married and did say Kriya Shema even at the night of his wedding. Yom Yishon shenasa. Amru lo tamidav, lo li marateinu rabbeinu shechatan patur mikriyat shema b'layla harishon. Didn't you teach us that a groom doesn't have to say kriyat shema the first night? Amar lehem, eini shomea lachem levatel mimeni ol malchut shamayim afilu sha'a achat. Even though the law is that he shouldn't say kriyat shema, he nevertheless decided to do it. Rachatz b'layla harishon shemeita ishto. He washed the first night after his wife's death. Ahu lo tamidav lo li maratenu arbenu sha'avel asu l'chotz. That a mourner is not allowed to wash, to bathe. Amar lehem eini kasha'arat kaladam istanisani. I'm not like an ordinary person. I'm particularly sensitive or fastidious. I don't know what the exact English equivalent of istanis is, but it's from the same root as esthet, I mean, meaning very
sensitive
to things. And therefore, in my case, going without bathing would be considered tortured, and therefore.
Okay. What's Rashi saying? Ma'oneg?
Ma'unaga?
Defining istanis?
Yeah.
Is that from the root of having joy from...
No.
What's Ma'onag?
He's spoiled. Mu'unag u mufunak, is Rashi said. He's sensitive and spoiled. Okay. My timer. Aninot yaraita biyom hu dechtiv yachvita ki omar rabanan hu degazgu balayla. That the laws of Avelut midyaraita apply only on the very first day, and the subsequent days is only a takana de rabanan. Uvi istanis lo gazgu rabanan. And in case of this particularly sensitive people, this the chachamim didn't make such a gzera. That's what the Rif explained. I've seen some rabbis, the Kakatvi, that heard Rabbi Gamliel, the Kasava, Aninat Laila, the Rabbanan, he lo kaimalan kavate. The Aval Gav dechtiv Shabbat Yomim, Leilot, Biklal Yomim. Mechaz Yomil said, the Spiro Leila Hanura Buddha, these authorities seem to be of the opinion, the Shiva Yomei Aveilut Diraitanin, that the 7 days of mourning are all Adin Diyaraita. V'gamrili mimiltav midichtiv v'ya'as la'aviv evel Shabbat Yomim. That he had a mourning for his father for 1 week. And the Rif says, v'lav hachim miltav. This is incorrect. That is, the idea that the laws of Aveilut for the first week are Adin Diyaraita is simply not so. V'vahedya amrinan v'perak t'vul yom u'musal kippurim. And in the Perek in the Masechet Tzvachim it says, "Hein hayom hikrivu et chatatam." When Aharon was explaining his behavior after the death of his sons, "Ani hayom asur v'alayla mutar, aval adorot bein v'yom uvein v'alayla asur divrei Rabbi Yehuda." Rabbi Shimon omer, "Ani nalayla eino midivrei Torah, elo midivrei sofrim." Ve'almina nami hatam ad matay medadonin alav kol oto hayom below leilo. Rabbi omer kol zman shelo nikvar tofes leilo. Amir Rabbanan kame doraba v'amar midi amar Rebbe yom kvura tofes lelo imo midi Rabbanan miklal di yom mita tofes lelo midi oraita v'safa Rebbe anin at laila di oraita v'tanya hein hayom hikui v'chatam ani hayom asur v'layla mutar v'dorot ben v'yom v'en laila asur d'Rabbi Yehuda Rebbe yom anin at laila ela midi v'yitur midi v'yisafrim l'ol amenu chavim lal laila eno midi v'yitur me'el midi Rabbanan v'chachamim asur chizuk v'divrehem yoter mishel Torah v'garsina nami b'psachim onein t'ovel v'ochele p'scho l'erev Kasava aninot laila de rabbanan. V'gabi pesach lo himidu divrehem b'makom karet. V'kevan de'ashkechinon hani kulit hanoi de sviro l'udiyom rishon bilchud yoraita. Ava leilo l'udol yishom sheni l'mita lo tafis el med rabbanan. V'rabi Yehuda l'chudeyu de savad yomita tafis leilo med raita shminan de let hilchata kavate. V'kaimin kaimelan yachid v'rabim halacha k'rabim. And this is the Rif's conclusions. Hilchach yom rishon de hu yom hamita. Who knew the Ita Midiraita? The laws of Aveilut apply Midiraita only on the day of death itself. Aval Mileil Yom Sheini Ve'elech Midirabanan. That's the Rif's conclusion. And it can be, we also see it in the Yerushalmi, which I xeroxed in the next page. If we turn to the next page and look at where there's this little star on the right-hand side, on the line immediately above where that star is. Minayin la'avel min ha-Torah shiva. How do we know from the Torah that Avelut applies for 7 days? Vayas la'aviv avel shivat yamim. And now the Gemara asks, Ulamedim davar kodim lamatan Torah, can we derive anything from events that took place before Matan Torah? Rabbi Yaakov baracha b'shem Rabbi Zeura shavar la min hadah, u'petach oim mo'ei teishu yomam v'layla shivat yomim, u'shmishvartem et mishmeret mishkan Hashem. K'shem sheshimer HaKadosh Baruch Hu al olamav shiva, just like the Kadosh Baruch Hu sat for 7 days in mourning for his world, kachatem shimu alachichem shivai shiva. Uminayin sheshimer HaKadosh Baruch Hu al olamav shiva. How do we know that the Kadosh Baruch Hu sat in mourning for 7 days? When it says, Vayehi l'shivat hayamim, at the end of the 7 day period, umei hamabul hayu al ha'aretz. So now the Gemara asks, umetavlim kodim sheyamut hameit? Had the Kadosh Baruch Hu sat in Shiva before the world was destroyed? So the Gemara says, Elo basar vadam she'eino yodea ma'atid liyot, eino mitavel ad sheyamut hameit. A human being who doesn't know the future doesn't mourn until after the event. אבל הקדוש ברוך הוא שיודע מה עתיד להיות, שימר עלינו תחילה. אית דבוי מימור אלו שבת ימי אבלו של מותו של אח הצדיק. So, again, the Yerushalmi seems to be of the opinion that there is no firm evidence from the Torah that in fact the 7 days of mourning are the Abaita. And in fact the Rambam also says this explicitly, if we turn the next two pages. Mitzvat Asay, Rambam says, Lehit Avel al Hakovim. There's a commandment to mourn the relatives. Shene'emar v'yachalti chatat hayom hayitav b'enei Hashem. Aaron's explanation of his behavior to Moshe. And Rambam adds, Ve'ein avelut min ha-Torah elo b'yom v'yoshon bilvad, shehu yom hamita v'yom ha-kruah. The only day in which the mourning is in the Araita is on the day of death, if that is also the day of burial. אבל שאר השבעה ימים אינו דין תורה. אף על פי שנאמר בתורה ויעש לאביו אבל שבעת ימים, נתנה תורה ונתחדשה הלכה. ומשה רבנו תיקן להם לישראל שבעת ימי אבלות ושבעת ימי המשתה. So we see as frequently as the case, the Rambam gets as his source the Yerushalmi rather than the Bavli, since he's practically quoting the Yerushalmi verbatim here. מאי מתי יתחייב אדם באבל? משיסתם הגולל. When is the person obligated to start the mourning? The Mishnah uses the phrase "Meshi Yistam Hagolel." We interpret "Meshi Yistam Hagolel" meaning when the body has actually been buried. If you take a look in the Radvaz, for example, Mehimatai Yitchayev Adam, Beperak Elu Megalchim, Plukta the Tanoi, Pasuk Yidu Rabbi Shud, Emma Mishi Yistam HaGolel, Vedaat Rabbeinu, Shelo Nikvas Timat HaGolel, Ad Sheikvar HaMet, Vyechasuhu Biyafav. Vyachol Pi Shedarkam Lassot Binyan Al HaKever, Mishi Nechnas HaKever, HaKever Matnuchayev HaRelu. No, Kedem Kodem Mukein, Afilu Matnuhu Ba'aron, De Masmerim, Lo Nikvas Zes Timat HaGolel, Ad Sheikvar. Even if you put the corpse in the coffin and nailed the coffin shut, that's not considered the Yistam HaGolel. Okay. It's not relevant to us, to the subject for tonight, but at least we should take 5 minutes off to understand what the phrase means, Yistam HaGolel. What is the actual meaning, the literal meaning of the word? What is a Golel?
A rock that you put over?
Over what?
Over the grave.
Maybe a stone you roll you seal the cavern where the bodies are buried.
You seal the what?
The cavern where the bodies are buried.
What cavern?
Well, they didn't always bury people in the ground the way we do now. They put people in.
That's right. The meaning is the Mata Golel has to do with.
They roll a stone.
They roll, in fact, if you take a look at Xerox's picture of what the old method of burial was on the left page, you can see that there's a round stone that's used to roll. They would bury people in catacombs. And then roll the stone up in front of the cavern where the body was placed. In other words, it was not below ground burial, but rather, well, now what they're offering, they didn't have air conditioning. But
isn't that what the Marat Hamakrila was?
Presumably. But it's interesting that you see that during the whole period of time of the Rishonim, Rashi and Tosfot, they all had trouble in understanding the literal meaning of Stimata Goleil, because the method of burial had changed. By the time of Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, they buried people more or less the way we bury them today, either directly in the ground or in a coffin under the ground. And the true explanation is, if you take a look at the next couple of pages, I xerox from Rav Hillman's book on Chulin. Remember, Rav Hillman was a dayan in London for many years, and he was Rav Herzog's father-in-law, and he came to Yerushalayim in the 30s, I guess, and he is explaining Rashi, if you have to see in the left-hand column, Rashi, Divar Machpil Goleil, Kisui Ha'aron Shel Hameit. This is the page after the picture.
Oh.
And just, this is sort of a side issue, but it's worth seeing something. Kisui Ha'aron Shel Hameit. Hmm? Rashi in the left-hand column here. He's just explaining Rashi. Dofek shenotnim betzido adkan. V'chein haramba milchot tumat meit perek beiz v'perish ha-mishnayis v'farish v'perish Rashi. V'chein muva b'shem Rabbeinu Chananu v'torat ha-adam l'haramban b'inyan ha-talat ha-beilut v'yeshkol perek beiz v'nun beiz. Omnam ha-tosvot v'shabat v'kama v'kamot v'teshub v'peil v'zem v'kama v'kamot v'shas, etc. Lachain, I'm skipping a paragraph, Pirash Rabbeinu Tam, the Golel, who matseva shel al ha-kever. Rabbeinu Tam thought it was a tombstone. V'lashon Golel shayach ba-even, k'yafi v'galalu at ha-even. V'gam al peor shrei hekshu ha-tosos, and so on. And he goes through the various different opinions that you find. And then, if you turn to the next page, Omnam, he writes, Ka'asher zachiti lihiyot b'shnat tafresh pei-hei b'Yerushalayim ir ha-kodesh. I guess that, what is that, 1925? I was in Jerusalem. Halachti b'kivrei ha-mulachim v'asanhedrin. V'yach al-ti shariti b'in ha-shem netvari li agav urcha gam b'zulat ha-tzad ha-historii kol ha-mukomot ha-mukhurazarim b'inyanim eilu b'sifrei ha-tamarim v'amorim. V'derach agav d'zdamein li gam kein l'btzom pesha davar nakon l'hod g'olel v'dofek sh'netliku b'or yishonim. Hine kol v'tei ha-kvarot k'mat tochen achad lehem. שיש חצר לפני המערות שהכרוכים בתוכן והוא לפי השערה כאין שש על שש עמות כמלא המיטה וקבריה כדתנן במרמורכי פירות ומכותלי החצר מבחים נחתכות המערות. You go into the interior courtyard and there you have various different caves that are opening. בחיינו הדתניה בתוספתא ואיזהו חצר הקבר, and so on. ובכל מערה יוצאת מכל כותלי החצר נמצא דלת כרוכים בדלת כותליה ויצוי רגלי כל כוך וכוך נמצא פתח אחד שנכניסתו היא למאורה אחרת, ולפי זה מכל מאורה נכנסים לארבע מאורות אחרות. They branch off, like the catacombs. ולכן בכל מאורה מהאחרות נמצא דל כרוכים ודל תחים מצד המאורות, etc. ועתה, let's skip to the next paragraph, נבוא לעניין גולל ודופק, שראיתי שם רק במקום אחד, והוא בחצר קל בשבוע, שנשארו במקומן זה כ-2,000 שנה. וזה תוארם. אבן אחת גדולה עומדת שם לסתום את כל הפתח אל החצר מבחוץ, בגובו ובחרבו במילואו. You have a stone, rolling stone door, which seals the entrance to the entire set of graves. צורתו כמנדף אב ועגול כביצה, וכשצריכים לסתום בה את הפתח, מעגילים אותו לצד ימינה, ונכנס צד האבן הימנית בחלל של החומה, חלולה לפי רוחב האבן מצמצום, it fits exactly into something to hold it, שלא תפנה אנה ואנה. אכן כאשר תעמוד בגובה, עלולה להתגלגל לצד שמאלה מפני העיגול שבתוכה. ומה גם אם תשיג דחיפה מבהמה וחיה שעל פי השדה, לכן סמכים אותה באבן אחרת מתחתיה, עשו אדמות טחול או חריץ החלה. In other words, a dofek is simply a wedge that's put to the on the other side of the
like a
doorstop to prevent it from rolling out. The method of locking, of closing off this cavern that contained all of these tombs and catacombs in the inside is to have a rolling stone which fits exactly on the right hand side when you roll it up into an indentation in the wall, and then you put a block on the other side, like you do when you don't want your car to back off down a hill or something, to prevent it from rolling in the other direction. And that, he says, is the meaning of Goleil and Dofek. And then he goes back and explains that after the method of burial changed to our current system, nobody understood what the original meaning of these words were. So here's one of the rare cases where halakhic work has as its explanation the direct archaeological evidence on the part of the viewer. Okay, let's now, but let's turn back to our, we're still at the basics of our main topic. Let's now go back to the Ramban. That's right after the Rambam. This is, now this is a Xerox from his Torata Adam. Vahani Shiva Yameda Abeilut. These 7 days of mourning. Amri Rabata, the Yom Rishon, the Araita, Ushar Yomid Rabbana. Our rabbis, some of our rabbis say that the first day is the Araita and the others are just a Takana Dorabanan. Yivachen Katabi Hilchot Rabbeinu Zal. This is the opinion of the Rif, of Rabbi Palsi. The Achen Eskimu Rabbanan da Abeilut Yom Rishon, the Hu Yom Mita Ukruva de Araita. If the man died on the 13th of Nisan and he was only buried the 14th, Yom Kvura Drabanan, Lo Tafis Leilom Drabanan. And it's not Shina Matin and Emma, Kim Kalat Yom, or Yom Kosman Shonikva, Hakabay Yishtu Ilem, Yik, Lepi Rapidok Yomar. So that's the opinion of the Rif. Vachach Mei Hatzofa Tim Zal Hishivu, Im Kain, if the Dinim of Abeilut are Midiorita, at least as far as the first day is concerned, in Cain, Heich Amru Halachaki Divrei HaMekel Abel. We have this general principle that we follow the more lenient opinion in Abeilut. How can that be? V'halo b'shel Torah Halechacha HaMachmir, V'kol Shekein B'yachid Mekel Rabim Machmirim, Shayem L'asot Kedivei Rabim, V'od Hishivu Midiamroinan L'gabei Speikot, Rabin Chimon Gamliel Amir Kol Sheshah Shloshim Yom V'adam Eino Nefel, the question of whether it was a miscarriage or a true birth and so on. The Sotos was in the, goes over a whole list of cases where we applied a lenient ruling and therefore comes to the conclusion that all of the laws of Aveilut are only Dinim D'Rabbanan and don't have a real basis in the Oraita. And he discusses all of this. Let's and he brings various proofs to this opinion, and let me pass down to two or three pages later. V'yachshav ani chozer l'sayeya al divrei ha'gaonim zal k'shanim u'ba'avel safek shehu achiv safek she'eno achiv safek shehu b'no safek she'eno b'metabel ba'omen v'lo m'tamei ezu anina m'yom ha'mitav y'anu m'fod y'har v'mei v'chum ha'min lo yishto b'anu t'alim v'chavar v'arri b'kan safek ha'velut l'achmir alma y'safek t'arahu וזו שהקשינן לא מהקילו בספק בלדות נראה בעיניי שלא מפני ספק של דבריהם הקילו בהם אלא שכל ספק בין קיימה אין לי בו שאדם דבר עליהם ולא מקיים בו ואף איתו כי אומר. He says that many of these laws of why you're lenient in cases of doubt and so on in Aveilut is a psychological one, namely that if the person is not likely to really feel the pain, then there's no sense in making all of the laws of Aveilut apply to him if the situation where, for example, the child might not have really been a live birth and so on and so forth. And now, okay. So that's the basic of opinion. There are three opinions amongst the authorities as to whether the laws of Aveilut in general for 7 days are Midiyaraita, or whether only the first day, or according to Chachmei Tzofat, only even the first day is not the Araita, all the laws of Aveilut are Midiyaraita. Now let's turn back to the subject at hand, which is occupy us today and next week, and that is what happens when, as in this case, there's a conflict between a joyous occasion, a wedding on one hand, and a funeral on the other. And the Gemara says that only in the case where the father of the groom or the mother of the bride dies do we postpone the funeral and complete the marriage and then have the Sheva Brachos for a week and then the Shiva starts afterwards. Abal Ipchalo. Now let's take a look at Tosfot. Abal Ipchalo. We will have it on the second page. Vahu Hadin, Tosfot says, Im Abelim Machmat Sha'ar Krovim. The same rule will apply if a person is in mourning for other relatives. Suppose a brother or a sister dies and so on. Tema. The Amar Beperek Gimel Demoed Katan Meita Ishto Asur Lisaad Sheyavu Shloshah Regalim Ve'im Ein Lo Banim Mutar Lisaad La'altar Mishum Periyav Riva Henichel Lo Banim Ketanim Mutar Lisaad La'altar Mishum Parasatam. So the Gemara there clearly says that if a man who has no children can marry immediately, and if a man has small children and he needs help in taking care of them, can also marry immediately. And here it says that unless it's the husband, the father of the groom, or the mother of the bride, all other relatives you're supposed to mourn completely and wait.
Did you discuss previously why it selected the father of the groom?
Yes, the Gemara says because in those days the father of the bride, of the groom, was the one that provided for the wedding. He was the man that provided the finances for the wedding and so on. And presumably we were talking about a young groom, 14, 15, 16-year-old boy, who if his father dies, there's not going to be anybody else who's going to actually be able to prepare the wedding for him. So therefore, if it's another relative who dies, the wedding can be reconstituted later. But if it's the father of the groom that dies, then we worry that perhaps the wedding won't take place at all. And similarly, it's the mother of the bride who prepares the trousseau and gets the bride prepared for a wedding and so on. Nobody else can really replace her. So these are people whose services for the actual organizing of the wedding are irreplaceable, and therefore we postpone the funeral and have the wedding first. But the implication is that in all other circumstances, you just postpone the wedding and have bury the dead, have the funeral, and then wait. So Tosfos is asking, if that is the case, why do they allow a person to remarry immediately upon the death of his wife? What does the word immediately mean?
Okay.
The Yeshlom Atosa says, the la'altar, the word the la'altar that we find in the Gemara in Moed Katan, lav dafka, doesn't mean immediately. Ela klomar mutar li'achar zayin. When the Gemara in Moed Katan says that the man can marry immediately in the case that he has no children or he has small children and he needs help in the house to help take care of them, it means that at least he waits until after Shiva. Aval liv'ol, to actually consummate the marriage, av li'achar shloshim, you wait until the end of shloshim. K'dimuchach batarachi b'ma'aseh sh'meitah ishto shel Yosef ha'kohen, v'yamar l'achotah b'veit ha'kohen, tzifiyu b'anasi b'nei achotayach. V'yachol pichen lo b'ay la'ad zman l'ubah, ma'ay zman l'ubah shloshim yon, v'al l'kansot ha'ch shloshim, v'tok shiva, excuse me, with 30, v'tok shiva v'aday asur k'dimuchach. So the phrase, tok shiva, to marry within the first Shiva week would be prohibited, like our Gemara here says. Umasha Amarla Babeta Kvarot, when he says that he said to her at the actual cemetery, Lo Hayazek Nisa Ela Shidukin Be'alma. They didn't get married immediately, just simply made an engagement. They were engaged, he told her, they agreed that she would marry him, and then they postponed it until the end of Shiva. Lo Veneralavi, the Vadai Old Otoshi Yeshlo Banim Ktanim Mutar Lisatov Shloshim. If a person has small children, he certainly can marry within 30 days. Kudamashba Ruth Yosef Kohen. Aval Otosha Elo Banim Klal Asur Lisa Adeachar Shloshim Kevan Sheno Yachol Devol Tov Shloshim. If the wedding cannot physically be consummated until after 30 days, it doesn't make any sense to get married before the Shloshim are over. וכן מחלון במסכת סמכות, דתן ירמד דברים אומרים, כשיש לו בנים גדולים, אבל אין לו בנים, או שיש לו בנים קטנים, מותר ליסה אחרת, לאחר 30, לאחר 30, מצמא דאסור אפילו ליסה תל 30. ויחו גב, יש לו בנים קטנים, מותר ליסה 30, ומקום מקום נקד אחר 30, ושמאין לו בנים. So that's the Reese position, that a man without children, the wedding is actually postponed until the end of 30. But a man with small children, whose household has to be, as an emergency, to be organized, can get married right after Shiva. Rabbeinu Tam would tell him out, "Ve'enu banim afilu l'mol shavitot shloshim." Rabbeinu Tam is more lenient. He says that a man who has no children can even consummate the marriage within shloshim. Achar Shiva, yishum piru yavarim. Vahi desmachot enam yitayshevet kepiru shav. So that's the second opinion, Rabbeinu Tam's, which is more lenient. V'nireh d'v'yesh lo banim tanin shari lisa v'ilu imnim hi nami aveila. In the case where there are small children, not only if the groom, who is the father of the children, needs help in the house, can marry within shloshim, but even if the wife is a avela.
She lost her sister.
In that particular case, she lost her sister. The husband, even so, the need of the husband and his family can displace the obligations of shloshim, even of the wife, of the bride. Even though, after all he needs is to marry someone to help him take care of the house, if he's in a rush, why doesn't he simply marry somebody else who's not an avela? Okay. But Tosfos says, there's not much proof from the case of that situation. The Shema Shaini Hatam, that the reason there was a special circumstance which would make her more suitable to take care of her sister, of her nephews, than anyone else. Okay.
Why are they getting themselves so caught up in this whole issue?
Of what?
They're just letting people do their thing, and
what is their thing?
I mean, why are they getting so caught up with all these possible things?
Because this is
they can't possibly bring to the tabulation every possible exigency of a couple getting married under whatever circumstance, with the death of the family. They're picking out general categories.
Well,
why did the rabbis get themselves involved in this?
Well, first of all, this is, unfortunately, a typical and common problem. This is not an unusual or far-fetched problem. The issue is what to do when an unfortunate event occurs. When there's a death in the family, do you postpone the wedding? Don't you postpone the wedding? And you want to get some sort of a compromise between the necessity to mourn.
Clearly, you have a bunch of experts here, and they all have different opinions about how.
We've all decided two opinions.
If you go to any community, you're going to find the same thing. You go to this rabbi, you get that.
Right.
So this one, you get the other. Why get it all into print? Why focus on this?
Well, if you were a practicing rabbi, you would have to decide these issues. And as you see here, Rabbeinu Tam took a more lenient position, and Rabbi took a slightly more rigid position. We will find rabbis who take an even more lenient position than Rabbeinu Tam. And then we'll find some rabbis who are a little bit more machmir. As you say, there's a spectrum here. But this is one of those kinds of problems which unfortunately arises typically all the time in a rabbi's experience. This is not one of those far-fetched issues. So,
well, at least from the life expectancy of the suspect, maybe, the rite of passage, a child's death marriage.
Your complaint may be, why hasn't somebody decided all of these issues and simply come to a consensus? Well, they have. I mean, but unfortunately, they came to different consensuses here, and this is a situation in which there is a spectrum of opinion. So there's room for a practicing rabbi to maneuver in here, and we will see some of the ways in which they do maneuver. But I'm not sure I understand what your objection is. But your objection, I think, is that this particular subject that we're studying tonight is substantially more technical than the type of subjects that we've been studying and ensuring for the last.
Very technical and very subject to individual interpretation according to the local community. And
it's very technical, but it may not be necessarily subject to individual interpretation. I agree that it's technical.
And practical.
But unfortunately, it's practical. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there are many things in medicine, for example, which are...
Every circumstance is very specific.
But this won't be very specific. I mean,
a man who doesn't have children. But suppose the man has some children.
No, the question... The question is, are there going to be extenuating circumstances which will allow the laws of Avilut to be postponed? And what are they? Okay, and on this, there's a slight variation of opinion. Rabbeinu Tam is of the opinion that just the fact that the man has never been married, he's a young man who's never been married, and if you don't allow him to get married, then if you postpone the wedding for too long, then what will happen is that, it'll interfere with the future of his life. Under those circumstances, you will allow him to postpone, to overcome his obligations as a mourner. Oh, the Rhee is a little bit more strict on this. He's saying that only if it's really an extremist, the man has a household of five small children and there's no way he can cope, and then you're going to do that. So, I mean, there is this spectrum of opinion. And if you are a practicing rabbi, this is the bread and butter of what you have to learn how to decide. If you don't decide these issues in your shul, you get fired very fast. This is not perhaps the kind of issue that you want to speak on from the pulpit, and maybe you're right, this is not, should not be the kind of issue that we would study at this year here. And as I mentioned at the very beginning of this year, this is a typical type of technical subject that normally you will find in most shiurim, and we've never dealt with it. This session, this semester, or this year, we've dealt with broader topics, and I chose for this particular evening a more technical one. And it's interesting to see how the rabbis in various times dealt with it, but I don't know what to do, since this is the subject matter that I prepared.
I'm not curious as to why.
Why what? I mean, it's technical, but it's practical. Okay. So let me read, for example, Rabbeinu Tam's position in greater detail from the Sefer HaYasha, for example. He writes, I didn't Xerox this and hand this out. Aval kach da'atino teshem utar lichnos la'alter afilu betok shloshim yom lomi shelo kiyim peryev ha'ruviyah.